You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're still waiting for the Patriots and Panthers offensive lines to show up. With another Super Bowl in the books, we move into the offseason, where the media is forced to focus on non-stories such as Deflategate. Just as Daniel surely will, due to that fiasco, I'll be taking a break from following football news so closely over the coming months. Still, before I take that break, I'd like to comment on one more story. Cleveland Browns quarterback Johnny Manziel continues to throw his career away in favor of partying. Former Cowboys star running back Emmitt Smith had the following to say on the future of Johnny Football. Quote, "I think Mr. Manziel has a decision to make. It's either the nightlife or his career. Just that simple. I think every player comes to that crossroad. It's either the nightlife, the streets, or your career. I chose my career, and I think a lot of players choose their career as well. Some don't. He needs to get it. He may be a guy that already has enough, if you will, but you have to be hungry. You got to be willing to sacrifice certain parts of your life." Close quote. I agree wholeheartedly with Emmitt Smith, but with a clarification. I firmly believe that what he said applies to every single one of us if we want to become a full-fledged adult. In that sense, I also wouldn't call the choice a sacrifice. I'd call it identifying what's truly valuable in life. Granted, I've always been straight edge, but I don't see any value that the nightlife and streets present beyond self-destruction masquerading as escapism or hedonism. And self-destruction is no value at all. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Any thoughts on the Super Bowl, Daniel?
Does Beyonce exclusively wear pleather bathing suits? I only ever see her in that outfit.
I don't know. I'm not a Beyonce expert. I think this is a week we would actually need Elliot to answer that question.
I'm gonna save that for next week. I was unclear on that point. Aside from that, I feel like it didn't really happen in the sense that nothing really happened.
Yeah, poor quarterback play, poor offensive play on both sides of the ball. It was not a Super Bowl to remember at all.
It's bad when you have to wait for Coldplay for the stuff on your TV to get exciting.
Yeah. Also joining me via Skype, from the land of many strong trees, James Elias. Did you have a favorite Super Bowl commercial, James?
Oh, so many favorite Super Bowl commercials. And the bowl itself. I mean, the offense, the defense, just there were so many things that, I didn't see it.
You what? Didn't watch the Super Bowl?
What? What?
No, I thought I'd give, you know, my Donald Trump style description of the Super Bowl. It didn't seem to go over too well. So yeah, I helped my friend move in to, his new apartment in Riverside, California. We always call it Reeferside.
Who the fuck decides to move on Super Bowl Sunday?
That's a really good question. Ever. I actually would have watched it. I'm not an anti-football guy. I'm like, you know, I'm fairly pro football. I'm pro football. I don't follow it too much, but yeah, I would have liked to watch it. And he just said like, okay, we're moving on, February 7th. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds fine, you know, and yeah, that's Super Bowl Sunday. So perfect. Right.
All right, then.
At least there was little traffic, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
there was on the way back. No, yes. On the way back, there was traffic. It was perfect.
That was your Trump-like description, but from what I hear, Bernie Sanders was upset that only two teams got to play.
So I'm gonna punch your question.
When Bernie
into
Sanders
Daniel.
Is president, all teams will get to play in the Super Bowl.
It's called the Pro Bowl, Daniel, and we'll see how that works.
Pro Bowl. Yes.
So I'm going to punt the question Did you have any commercial favorites or observations?
You muffed the punt. I refuse to answer.
You refuse to answer?
Just kidding. Just kidding.
By the way, while we're talking about that, did you notice how mad the Broncos punter got mad at the end when he did that poor punt?
And he like was like, gosh.
There was like a minute left in the
game. My only job.
Yeah. They were up by 14 and they were obviously going to win, but in the background you can see him slamming his helmet down while everyone else is celebrating. It was hilarious.
Well, because it's a punter. Like, you one bad punt and you're probably cut because there's like 100,000 people who can do your job. So, yeah, that guy's screwed. Anyway, commercials. I'll tell you which commercial I didn't like was the puppy monkey baby.
Yeah,
that,
I didn't get that.
Mountain Dew something or other.
Yeah, Mountain Dew Kickstart.
I understand why Adam Carolla calls Mountain Dew Nectar of the Tards when I watched that commercial. I didn't get it. I felt really old. I felt like, why are you on my TV right now? Show me a Buick commercial.
We're going to combine three awesome things. And I'm like, the most three awesome things you can think of are a puppy, a monkey, and a baby?
Right. Most guys, yeah, when they think awesome things, baby, top three. Yeah. Top three. What I could use right now is an 18-year-long dependent. Yes. That's, fuck you, Mountain Dew. That's
it's
terrible.
It's like 26 years now, bro.
They need to be like my they need to be like my friend in Carolina who had to watch the game on tape delay because he's got an 8-month-old. That's what all guys are thinking when they're watching the Super Bowl.
And he had to I guess it is
pandering to guys who are most likely to have teenage pregnancies. So, in that sense, they hit their demographic and they hit it hard.
Talking about the advertising or the guys with teenage pregnancies?
Combined with the football babies commercial, which, by the way, blatant ripoff from the Dave Damashek football program, who had the football baby picking football games long before the NFL came along to take his thunder. But, yeah, drink some Mountain Dew, look over at your girlfriend and make a football baby. I could not believe that fucking ad campaign NFL was running. Basically, watch football and then go fuck. That's what they were telling you.
Oh, the Super Bowl babies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whatever. Football babies, Super Bowl babies, whatever. Anyway, the only commercial I really laughed at was the Kia commercial with the walk-in closet.
Yeah.
Only because I thought, how has no one ever done a closet with Christopher Walken in it before and called it a walk-in closet? And so I laughed. And then the other one where the bridesmaid sort of Odell Beckham's the bouquet that's being tossed over her shoulder. I thought, again, how has no one ever done this since he made that catch we've now seen 100 billion times? But other than that, didn't like the wiener dogs. You know what? We're getting on a huge tangent here, but
it's okay.
Fuck women's rights.
Oh, that abuse
all
commercial?
I have to say.
Did that abuse commercial piss you off too?
It did piss me off. Not what I'm talking about.
Oh, that pissed
me
off.
National Association of Zealot, late whatever, NARAL, N-A-R-A-L, the pro-abortion group. I'm pro-choice, whatever. They tweeted about the Doritos commercial. Do you remember the Doritos commercial? For people who didn't see it, it's a woman getting an ultrasound. She's very pregnant. And a guy standing there eating Doritos, and the baby in the ultrasound is like following the scent of the Doritos or something, or he has Superman X-ray vision. I don't know how he actually could know that the Dorito was there. Anyway, he's following it, and then the wife is like getting pissed, so she knocks the Doritos out of his hand, and then the baby tries to shoot out of her vag really fast.
What?
Yes, to go get the Doritos. It must have been the puppy monkey baby that came out, because he was pouncy.
All I could think about during that commercial was that that was one of the commercials that won the Work with Zack Snyder commercial contest, and I was like, Zack Snyder has to work with the fucker who came up with this. He's over there talking about, like, know your voice and know what you have to say, and it's a baby who smells Doritos from the womb.
Yes. Premature birth for Doritos.
That's a man who knows his values.
So, the commercial was stupid, maybe minor chuckle-worthy. The NARAL, this feminist pro-abortion group, tweets out that Doritos should be boycotted for humanizing fetuses and for pandering to stereotypes.
Oh my god.
No, they didn't. You're making that
yes,
shit up.
Yes, they abso-fucking-lutely did. I thought it was also a joke, so I went to their Twitter feed. It was absolutely, they were live tweeting all the commercials and basically bringing social justice shitty nonsense to all the commercials. I couldn't believe it.
Wait, doesn't pregnancy humanize fetuses?
Eventually, yes. I thought it was a right-wing conspiracy joke. It was absolutely
but
not.
Now it's
they
just a
serious.
Metaphysical fact that, yes. You know, fetuses eventually get humanized.
Wow. Oh, man, at which point were you like, she's pushing, push, fetus, oh, it's a human! Imagine that. It's not a puppy monkey, baby.
These little groups that have thrived on the internet, it started with Alex Jones, and now you just get these groups where just like every part of the news can now be analyzed under your particular set of insane ideas. Like with Alex Jones, Boston Marathon bombing. All right, was the government in a false flag terror attack? And you know, everything. Like, yeah, I wonder if this is a major cultural effect. I really hope it isn't. I hope it isn't. More thought is necessary on that one.
So the flags have to be false? Can't one of the flags be true?
Only if you're part of the global power structure.
That's one of the six flags, Daniel. One of them is false, and if you guess which one is false, you get free admission.
Six false flags is the worst amusement park on the planet.
Uh-oh. No, I had two observations.
Don't go on the 9/11 ride.
Oh my god.
I had two observations about the commercials. One, I thought they were all bizarre, except the car commercials. So I'm convinced the best advertising minds in the country work for car companies. And then two, the Bud Light commercial proved that Amy Schumer is not funny.
Not funny. All I could think is, why is she on my television right now? Bring back Helen Mirren.
They put her opposite Seth Rogen, and I was like, are they just trying to embarrass her? Because Seth Rogen is outclassing her big time right now.
Yeah. Well, the Helen Mirren one was kind of funny.
No, that was funny as well, yes. And it was, you know, she would be a better comedian than Amy Schumer.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, all Amy right. Schumer kind of reminds me of a political candidate. Everyone tries to act like she's a big deal, and she seems to think she's a big deal in her own mind, but I don't think anyone really likes her. Let's find out who I'm talking about in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
This just in, Justin was talking about Donald Trump. Or was he? No, Donald Trump, of course, has been in the news every day. I was going to say this week, but literally every moment of every day.
What if Donald Trump and Amy Schumer fucked?
Oh, man. That's a monkey puppy baby right there.
I think that's how you'd get that that acronym for that women's rights group, Gnarl.
Gnarl. Gross. So, Trump's in the news because he lost the Iowa caucus. You probably know that by now, as we were also live announcing the results on the podcast, even though it was a day late. Shut up. And Donald Trump thinks that Ted Cruz, who won the Iowa caucus, stole the election. Yes, he stole it. But it's not really clear how he stole it. But here's the thing. Donald Trump is insane, not just because of what he says or does or how he looks, but because the facts don't support any stealing of the election by Cruz. Cruz outperformed the polls in Iowa by 3.8%. Trump underperformed by 4.3%. But hey, what about that other guy? What about that other Hispanic? Marco something or other, not Polo. He outperformed the polls by 6.2%. So in fact, Marco Rubio stole the election. And then how about Ben Carson, who outperformed the polls by 1.6%? Did he also steal the election, Trump?
Didn't Ben Carson outperform the polls just by getting votes?
Yes, he did. You know who didn't? Was Jim Gilmore. You know who Jim Gilmore is? He's running for president. He got fewer votes than undecided.
Oh, I thought he was the guy who created Gilmore Girls.
No, but funny enough, he does use that phrase and Gilmore Guys as like fundraising tools, like be a Gilmore guy or be a Gilmore girl.
And no one's bothered to, you know,
he just lost my vote.
Right, infringement.
No one's bothered to sue him.
Right, it's just like, no, it's fine. Just let him. Just let him. It's fine.
So the other ways that Donald Trump is saying that Cruz stole the election is he put out that press release about Ben Carson quitting the race, even though Ben Carson wasn't quitting the race. Turns out that was based on a 100% valid CNN story that said that Ben Carson was taking a break from politicking after Iowa to go home and get some clean clothes. These are actual quotes from the article, by the way. Like Ben Carson was apparently just traveling with one suitcase around the entire fucking country trying to become president, and he needed some fucking shirts because he doesn't know what dry cleaners are.
Or online shopping.
And then the other way is apparently Cruz sent these mailers that apparently showed that voters were in, quote, voting violation because they hadn't voted in previous elections. But as even the Washington Post pointed out, these similar flyers have been being sent out for years by many candidates, including mostly Democrats. So, Ted Cruz won in Iowa. Suck it, Trump. Deal with it. You're gonna win in New Hampshire. It's okay. It's just New Hampshire. No one cares.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing about this story. Is there any more internet response than to lose the thing that everyone on the internet said you were going to lose, or everyone on the internet said you were going to win, and then claim the only reason you lost is because the other person cheated? Isn't that the ultimate internet response?
So we're using internet as an adjective here?
Yes.
Just marking that down in my record of adjectives.
It is a very internet kind of response. Donald Trump is the king of this nonsense.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, the guy who's tweeted like 100 billion times in this campaign. I don't know why we still pay attention to him. He doesn't.
Because he's leading in the frickin' polls. That's why.
Yeah, but
that's why I included that other story. Look, I included the second story. That Daniel, did you see the second story this time?
You need to not sub-bullet point them. I've learned that I don't read the second sub-bullet point. Justin sends us these 3-page single-spaced outlines of things that have multiple bullet points and sub-points. Just put it in the regular link. But no, I did see it this time.
Right. And the reason I included this article is this article proves to me that Trump is just a fabrication by the liberal media, the mainstream media, taking advantage of the internet culture in order to get Hillary elected. That's what I think is going on here, and that article proves it to me.
Like The Apprentice was just a sham, like that he doesn't actually exist. That was just a lead-up to him running for president.
No, I'm not saying
election.
That. I'm saying the fact that they're pushing him, and they're making us believe he's what the right wing wants, and that he's in the forefront of the right wing. That's all fabrication by the mainstream media.
Yeah, that's a good point. Trump,
yeah, the article.
There's definitely in their interest for Trump to win or to suck up all the attention.
That's right. The New York article is called Why Liberals Should Support a Trump Republican Nomination. And the article is very wholehearted. It's not mocking, but its wholehearted reasons are things like, first and foremost, he would almost certainly lose. Second, a Trump nomination might upend his party, meaning that the GOP needs to burn to the ground. And it says something like Trump is the only one holding the matches, which is a very Joker-esque sort of feel to it, which is kind of funny. But third reason to refer a Trump nomination, if he does win, a Trump presidency, quote, would probably wind up doing less harm to the country than a Marco Rubio or Cruz presidency. It might even possibly do some good. Really?
Yeah,
really?
I thought that article, it compares Donald Trump. Are we skipping all the way to that article, or was that even included in the links?
Yeah, it's the second article.
It's fucking there. Oh. Read it. Nobody reads it. You're
okay. Yeah, yeah. No, it's because it was like the third bullet point down and I couldn't really see it. So, I enjoyed the comparison of Donald Trump to Arnold Schwarzenegger because that's the description in this article of what Schwarzenegger did where he basically just wanted to win a popularity contest. He did. Then he tried to get some, you know, conservative legislation passed, but then once everyone bitched and moaned about it, he was like, oh, okay, like, I'm sorry, you guys. Like, I'll be cool and, you know, give you everything you want. You know, I think that was a very apt comparison.
To stop the climate from changing.
It's not a coincidence Arnold's taking over Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah, they literally say that too. It's pretty wild.
So yeah, the point is, Donald Trump is the internet personified. He's a stooge, and the mainstream media wants us to think he's important and he's not. We need to just ignore Trump.
Someone else who's a stooge, maybe. Or a genius.
And should be ignored.
Pharma Bro! Does anyone remember Pharma Bro? We did a little Pharma Bro news. This is like a Pharma Bro update. Pharma Bro's that guy who bought the drug company that sold the pills that were specifically for like treating certain infections you get from AIDS, and then he jacked up the price of the pill from $1,350 to $750 per pill, and of course, social justice warriors around the world went insane! Crazy insane. Well, they went so insane, in fact, that Pharma Bro Martin Shkreli was asked to come testify before Congress. I love the way that this article skirts around the question of whether or not he was actually subpoenaed or forced to come testify.
Oh yeah, he was subpoenaed.
Yeah, they never say that in here, by the way.
Yeah.
So he went to this congressional hearing, he was asked a bunch of questions, and the usually talkative Mr. Shkreli pleaded the fifth through almost everything, except at one point where Congressman Trey Gowdy suggested that he could answer because he was not being indicted for anything. And he said he would rather trust, he said, quote, I intend to follow the advice of my counsel, not yours. Meaning your advice, not your counsel, although that was very poorly said on his part.
Yeah, the congressman's just like, Martin, I mean, it's not like you're gonna incriminate yourself for talking about this raising of drug price issue that's totally unrelated to the investigation into you. I mean, how do you think it's gonna incriminate you? Like, it's such a joke. Like, he's clearly being brought before Congress. Like, see this guy? He's a bastard. We ought to nail him. So, by the way, Shkreli is under investigation for actual wrongdoing. I actually did a fair amount of research. I read about stories about this bro for about 2 hours or so. And, first of all, let me start with, he's a genius. He's an absolute genius. His parents, no, I'm serious. Like, literally, he's a genius because his parents were janitors from Albania. He didn't go to college. He had this mentor when he was about 14 or 15 who taught him about investing. And, he dropped out of high school early and started interning for investment firms, made tons of money by the time he was 16. Clearly a genius, made tons of money here and there by actually short selling biotech stocks. That's when it starts getting a little bit, this guy's mixed at the end of the day. It starts getting mixed. He has a history recently of getting biotech companies in trouble with the FDA, basically like going to the FDA and saying, hey, that company, you know, their drug's doing something wrong. He'd complain about it. Short sell the stock, make tons of money when the stock price goes down after an FDA investigation. Then the FDA finds that there was nothing actually wrong with the drugs in question. But in the meantime, Shkreli made a bunch of money off of his short sale. So that's pretty shitty of him. But what he's actually under investigation for is, stealing money from his, pharmaceutical company to pay back the debts of his investment company because one of his short sales went bad on his investment company. So he moved a little bit of money around on those books, made it look like his pharma company invested in his hedge fund. And he was actually booted as the CEO of the pharmaceutical company. So
Whoops.
You know, yeah, he's under investigation for something that, you know, is, you know, we're not sure if he's guilty yet or not, of course, but yeah, that's some actual bad stuff right there. But I really enjoyed how he treated Congress, which was exactly the way they ought to be treated. He just the entire time they were saying, like, Mr. Scully, how could you do this to people? Like, this is so bad. And he's just smiling the entire time. He's smirking at them, just this face of condescension, just like, yeah, right. Just this face. It was so entertaining to watch it. It was so, I watched it like 6 times.
And he did tweet afterward, hard to accept that these imbeciles represent the people in our government.
My favorite tweet from him was, the only regret I have about my congressional testimony is not bringing my Nintendo DS.
So his performance in front of Congress, was it more Tony Stark in Iron Man 2, Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, or Marshawn Lynch before Super Bowl 49?
It's like a mix of Lynch and Iron Man.
And then just being, yeah, his performance in front of Congress is like that, but seeing this guy, I can tell he's got low self-esteem, like kind of like drunk Iron Man where he throws that party for everyone and just makes an ass out of himself. Like that's basically what this guy's, what Skrelly's, live streaming of just random hours of his life is like. Kind of sad.
I mean, that's just social media.
He's lonely. You could tell that this guy was messing with a lot of people when he bought the only Wu-Tang Clan album for $2 million or whatever it was.
He's looking for attention.
Yeah, he's messing with people. And this whole, you know, raising the price of the drug thing just got blown way out of proportion because of social justice nonsense. If he did bad things, he did bad things, and he should pay for them. The problem with a lot of these things is, would he have been investigated at all if he had not been quote-unquote Pharma Bro?
He was actually under investigation before Pharma Bro. Before he became Pharma Bro.
James?
Yeah?
Yeah, but still.
Way to ruin Daniel's point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I studied this story really fucking hard, okay? I want to...
How dare you do show prep? How dare you, sir?
Hey, Daniel, by the way, you're wrong. Everything you just said is wrong.
Yeah, but still. What? See, now we're even. Now we're even because I said yeah, but still.
My favorite line about this was when one of the congressmen, I forget who it was, is just saying, you can smile all you want, Mr. Skrelly, but this is serious. People are dying. They're not. You know, like, and what's, yeah, it's like, wait, who's dying? Like, who, like, where is your study that's saying, like, people are dying from not getting this drug? Like, there's no hard evidence for that. He's like, this is your chance to make things right. And Skrelly is just, you could tell he was on the border of laughing.
Yeah, also, by the way, just so to remind people, you know, he did raise the price of this pill to $750. Not a single patient would actually pay $750 for these pills. He raised it because the insurance company's whatever provisions means that they would pay it, which means it's a symptom of government intervention into healthcare market. Oh, wow. So fuck you, Congress. And fuck you again for this next story, by the way. Sorry, James, I'm stepping on your research here, but you said I was wrong. So, yeah. Republicans introduced a bill this week requiring women to register for the draft.
Oh, gods.
Yes. Two Republican lawmakers, that would be Representative Duncan Hunter of California and Ryan Zink of Montana, said their joint legislation is aimed at provoking a fuller discussion of the Pentagon's decision to open all combat jobs to women. Top generals for the Army and Marines said earlier this week that women should be required to register for the draft now that combat jobs are open to them.
Wait, are you sure that these representatives just didn't want to be noticed? I mean, a Republican from California and a representative from Montana? They didn't just do something ridiculous to get noticed?
No, they absolutely did. No. Yeah. We're here too.
Right, exactly.
It's not all Paul Ryan. Yeah. Yeah, so they don't seriously believe this. At least I don't think they do. I think they're trying to make a broader statement about women women shouldn't be in combat roles, which is what they're trying to argue. But it's actually opened up a fuller discussion of whether or not we should have the draft at all, which is, I think, a fantastic discussion to have, because the answer is unequivocally and clearly no. We should not have a draft.
Man, this story is more complex than I realized.
Yeah. Well done.
I was just going to say, fuck, you want fucking equality. If I'm going to get drafted, you're going to get drafted too. Fuck you.
Yeah, but you know what I don't like about that? That is Republican logic, if there ever was such a thing.
Are you calling me a Republican?
Oh, yeah, I'm just not making any friends today. Just, you know what, guys? Sorry, I'll just sit here and just listen for the rest of the podcast.
We both know you can't do that.
So, yeah, non-Republicans make arguments like this too, but it's based on a Republican style premise, which is basically, they can't argue with the left on principles. So what they have to do is like, oh, well, let's just take your idea to its logical conclusion and then it'll seem ridiculous. But then they don't address the reason why it seems ridiculous. So, you know, for example, like, Democrats try to ban guns. The Republicans say like, hey, knives are, they can kill people too. Maybe we should ban knives. And then you look at England, who's only 20 years ahead of us socialism-wise, and yeah, they're trying to ban knives. So Republicans, shut up. You're giving the left more ideas. Hey, ban knives. That's great. We should totally do that. Like, you're just giving them ideas. Like, yeah, and because they completely lack, and the problem is they completely lack any abstract notions of why these ideas are wrong. All they can do is just point to the logical conclusion and say, hey, that doesn't make sense.
It's actually a fantastic point that I just visualize in my head almost like a Saturday Night Live skit where the Republicans are, after the Obamacare passing, like, huh, force people to buy health care. What's next? You're gonna force people to buy broccoli? And there's a Democratic congressman going, excuse me, slow down. Did you say, was that asparagus? No, broccoli? Yes, okay.
No, I was serious though. If we're gonna use if the dumb members of our gender have to be used as cannon fodder, we should be able to use the dumb members of that gender as cannon fodder as well. It's only fair if we're gonna have true equality.
Well, that's the other thing, is that some on the left are actually going, yeah, okay.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, because I mean, they recognize that this gives them more power if they can draft women as well. Come on.
Yeah. So let's not.
Let's be serious. If we fill the front line with women, everyone will get along better in the country.
God. There is an argument for putting women in the military, just because, like, come on, a bunch of dudes. Come on.
Yeah. What are they going to do all day?
Well, what do they do all day? I've heard some stories, but yeah.
I mean, seriously, if there are too many women in the country, it'd just be like, I think it's time for another war.
Yeah, it's that time of the month. We shouldn't draft women, but apparently DC thinks we should pay criminals. Yes, a DC bill being considered this week would pay people not to commit crimes. The DC Council voted unanimously Tuesday to approve a bill that includes a proposal to pay residents a stipend not to commit crimes. It's based on a program out of, guess which state? Guess which state?
I don't like to play guessing games, Daniel.
Yeah, except that you do, and you do it all the fucking time.
Seattle, it's out of Washington.
No, it's out of California, doofus.
Wow, one of those.
That advocates say has contributed to deep reductions in crime there. Not true. Under the bill, city officials would identify up to 200 people a year who are considered, quote, at risk of either committing or becoming victims of violent crimes. Did you hear that part? Either at risk of committing or becoming victims of violent crime. Those people would be directed to participate in behavioral therapy and other programs.
This story puts me at risk of committing crime.
Be put into behavioral therapy if you are at risk of becoming a victim of a violent crime. Just think about, anyway. If they fulfill
those
obligations.
That's probably just crappy grammar in the guy who wrote the story. I hope it is.
Don't wear that. If you wear that, you're asking for it.
If you fulfill those obligations, you will be paid money, up to $9,000 per year for not committing a crime or apparently not being a victim of a crime?
So two things. I have two things here. One, I thought this was called welfare.
It is. This
it's
is a different
one
kind.
Step above, yeah.
No, but what I'm saying, isn't the purpose of welfare to get people to not commit crimes? You're paying them a stipend?
I thought punishment was the way to get people not to commit crimes.
And two, do they have a profile available online of the behavior you have to demonstrate in order to get a free $9,000?
I don't know. None of this makes sense to me.
Like, 2 months worth of classes and they'll give me $9,000?
Yeah, but you need to start acting more at risk.
Although the problem with that, here's the secret problem they don't tell you about this, I bet. I bet they still tax the $9,000, so it bumps you into another tax bracket.
I don't know how any of this works. This seems like an incredible scam. Just an unbelievable scam that people are going to pull on the government. And it's going to cost D.C. $4.9 million over 4 years. Just ludicrous. How about you don't commit crimes? And if you do commit crimes, you put your ass in jail. The end.
Yeah, but that just contributes to the problem, Daniel.
The problem of not giving my money away to would-be criminals? Stop it!
You know, sometimes I really get the urge to steal Twinkies from the convenience store and punch the clerk on my way out. I just really get that urge sometimes.
You're at risk.
Am I?
Give that man some money.
Wait, no, I didn't just say I was at risk. I don't want a free $9,000.
Man, god damn. I fucking hate everyone.
Just sometimes I'm haunted
by
a pumpy monkey baby.
That should also be like, in the future, we'll just have our phones monitoring us and things we say, right? So if you're like, I'm so mad I could kick over that trash can, and you look at your phone and it's like, we'll give you $5 not to do that.
Dude, I'd be
click
rich
here
then.
To accept.
Are you kidding me?
I'm gonna ram this guy off the road. $100 not to do that. Click here to accept.
I'm going to be rich. I'm for this.
Man, I really want to look at that child porn. Oh, wait. Scientists, I'm just going to move on from that awkward attempt at a joke, have discovered what causes resting bitch face. Is anyone familiar with resting bitch face? I was only sort of vaguely familiar before I read this article, and I didn't know so many people suffered from it. But apparently Queen Elizabeth has it, so does fashion designer Victoria Beckham and actress Kristen Stewart, along with this slew of pop culture icons said to be afflicted with so-called resting bitch face. The vast majority are women, though Kanye West is among the male examples. And as soon as they said Kanye West, I knew exactly what resting bitch face was. Like, I knew immediately. All of them have been mocked by internet commenters for having a certain unintentional expression when their faces are not in motion. Thank you, Washington Post. A look best described as vaguely annoyed, maybe a little judgy, perhaps slightly bored. Resting bitch face. Did you know it was such an epidemic, first of all?
Yes.
Are you afflicted by it? Or?
No.
I tutored a girl for about one... It's a real thing. I tutored this girl, this high school girl, for about an hour. And at the end of it... Hilarious. And... at the end of it.
No, it sounded, the reason I laughed is it sounded like you were going to say because she had resting bitch face, it was only an hour and I never dealt with her ever again.
Oh, no. But it's, well, almost because I said like, okay, I can tell you don't think I did a good job. What can I do to improve? And she's like, no, you did fine. And I'm like, well, you didn't seem very happy about this lesson. And she said, oh, I have resting bitch face. Like, she just explained it to me as if like, oh, I can explain this misunderstanding. Resting bitch face.
Now imagine somewhere. If that conversation had happened after sex.
Yeah, but then
Justin,
the face wouldn't be resting.
She's 12.
She's at high school.
Okay. I'm just kidding.
Oh yeah, well that just makes it fine, right?
I'm just going off on the child porn joke.
Somewhere, a Democrat lawmaker is trying to get this worked into the disability legislation.
Oh,
so is that hyphenated? Resting bitch face? face or resting bitch face?
Here's the thing about this.
Where does the hyphen go?
Here's the thing about this, right? This is what I liked about this article. Is, you know, these people with resting bitch face claim, that's just the way my face is. There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing, like, I'm not a resting bitch. But if you read the article, it says they measured up to 6% of facial demonstration of contempt in their resting bitch face. Do you think it's possible that these people are communicating contempt without realizing it? Because we all communicate things without not realizing it. You know, sort of just our basic way of being. So do you think that's possible?
I think it's certainly possible that these people can be showing contempt or boredom or some elements of those things, and they don't necessarily mean it in the conscious sense. Like, they don't actively
6%.
Think.
That's such a small percentage.
Yeah, but at the same time, then, you know, who gives a fuck? The other thing I didn't like about this article is the title of the article is "Scientists Have Discovered What Causes Resting Bitch Face." Nowhere in this article does the sentence "This is what causes resting bitch face" appear.
Yeah.
It just talks about resting bitch face and the face reader science combobulator thing that they use to test pictures of people, and nowhere does it actually say what the cause is. I was waiting for something that's like, oh, it's you secretly have AIDS.
No, the cause is definitely cable news. If you watch that, you'll get this. You remember what your mom said? Like, you know, if you keep making that face, it's gonna get stuck like that. Well, contempt. There you go.
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly. Anna Kendrick also apparently has RBF, hashtag RBF.
And I think she has contempt for people. I do. I do.
I would too if I was Anna Kendrick.
All right, let's talk about some other people who probably have contempt for people, and that's people who make bad art. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. One of the things I've wanted to do this season is start every one of these sections with a review. So briefly, I wanted to talk about Bill Burr's new animated comedy on Netflix, F is for Family. It's set in the 70s. I think it's actually supposed to be set in the Great Lakes region, but it seems to be about a Boston-type family, a Boston suburban-type family. The animation style reminds me of King of the Hill. And Daniel, I know you watched 3 episodes of it because I forced you to watch the third. James, have you seen any of these?
No, I haven't.
All right, Daniel, you want to give...
Well, shut up then! Yeah. Okay.
Daniel, you want to give your impressions?
Oi, so I love Bill Burr. His stand-up comedy makes me quite giggly, sometimes outright chuckly. But this show, which I watched the first episode sort of with a bit of enthusiasm, you know, edge of my chair, like, it's gonna get funny. It's gonna be funny. It's Bill Burr. It's gonna be funny. Faiza as well, my fiance who loves Bill Burr. But Bill Burr is like her personal god, by the way. She worships at the throne of Bill Burr. And I just waited for it to get funny, and it was more so depressing. It's sort of a real, gritty kind of animated comedy. And it basically the father is trying to care for his family and do all the right things, and the family doesn't really appreciate him, and the son's a loser, the girl's like a sadomasochist, the son is a pussy, and the wife is very detached, and nothing goes right for the guy, but not in the sort of silly sitcom manner. It all goes wrong for him in the I don't know, Curb Your Enthusiasm mixed with fucking 6 feet Under manner.
Like, I got a better one for you. It's very Sisyphusian.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's the big words. That's what we pay you for.
Yep.
Sounds hilarious.
There are bit parts to it that I thought were kind of funny, like some of the TV shows, like the TV show he watches is kind of funny. His neighbor is funny. Some of the situations are funny.
Sometimes a man's gotta do what a man does.
Yes, that's the tagline to the show he watches about an overweight guy who scores with a bunch of women and kicks Mexicans' asses all over town. Yeah. But overall, I just found myself wildly depressed throughout all the episodes. I felt pity more than laughter or humor. And I couldn't make it past the second episode. And then Justin said, oh, I have to watch the third episode. They go to a football game. I was like, all right, Bill Burr, football. That sounds cool. And I was just even more depressed. Like, it was just fucking depressing as the son ruins his own life, basically. And this kid is traumatized by seeing Wang in the restroom. And
that happens.
I was never traumatized. Yeah. Like, I just didn't get it. It's not my... I can sort of intellectually see why it's edgy, interesting, funny, but my sense of life just wholeheartedly rejects it. Like, I just... my sense of life just dry heaves at the thought of having to watch another episode. But I will turn it over to Justin to give us the counterpoint here, why he enjoys the show.
Well, I watched all six episodes in one day. Don't judge me. So I opened up with saying it's set in the Great Lakes, but it has a very Boston feel to it. And I'm sure I've probably mentioned it on this show before, but Boston, Massachusetts in general has this very blue collar mentality that you give your life to the man, you put in your time, and you try to enjoy what you can on the edges. On the edges of your notebook, you try to enjoy what you can. That's what this show is every time this guy tries to get some moment of peace and quiet and, you know, to enjoy what he's earned and what he deserves, something else goes wrong. And something else messes up that causes him not to enjoy that anymore. And that's a very Massachusetts sense of life. And that's sort of what, I don't know if Bill Burr's trying to make fun of it or he's embracing it, but that's sort of where his comedy comes from as well. But I think his stand-up more comes from being like, no, I can rise above this and point out how stupid this all is. But the show's kind of doing it in a different way where it's actually capturing that. I mean, the reason I had Daniel watch episode 3 with the football game is when I was around that age, I went to Patriots games with my dad. And you know what? When you walked into the bathroom, you got traumatized like that. I still remember it. And I still have trouble going in a public restroom for that reason. That was accurate. What happened?
Because you had to step up to the Wang trough?
Yeah. I still remember that. It's just a trough of Wangs. And I'm like, what is going on? These people are all fat and disgusting. And they're all drunk. And it just reeks of alcohol. Like, it was so accurate. Like, so much of it just rang true to me. So I didn't, like, particularly laugh a lot or enjoy it. And I'm not even going to lie. I cried during episode 5 because there was something I really identified with. And I was like, oh, my God, I did that at one point in my life. And that was horrific and destructive and harmful that I did that. And it was almost cathartic that I was crying and, like, I identified that. But it accurately captures what it's trying to capture. Is it great art? I don't know. But I enjoyed it for that reason.
Ringing endorsement here at the Midside.
So let's move on to some news. Let's move away from this. We're just going to hit up a bunch of news. So there's some casting news for the Power Rangers movie. And I want to ask you guys, is this genius or obvious? Elizabeth Banks as Rita Repulsa.
Oh, it's interesting. I always thought you had to cast like a chubby Asian as Rita Repulsa.
Yes or no?
Repulsa wasn't chubby.
Yes, she was.
I
don't remember
just
being sure.
In my mind's eye.
Genius!
Okay. I don't know. Elizabeth Banks is awesome, so I'll just say genius.
James?
It's sort of like casting the Social Network guy to play
Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah, I don't see it. I see Rita Repulsa as just the Chinese Eisenberg version of Wicked Witch of the West, basically. Yeah, Chinese, yeah, whatever, Japanese. Sorry. So
racist.
Yeah, so racist. I don't see it personally.
The reason I think it might be obvious is, if you've seen The Hunger Games, is there much of a difference between Effie Trinket and Rita Repulsa?
That's interesting.
When you put it that way.
Rita Repulsa has more staff.
That's because Effie doesn't let any staff near her.
That's a lie. I meant that. Yeah, it's funny. Hilarious.
More news. Let's just hit this real quick. Colony was renewed for season 2, so if you haven't started watching yet, Daniel, you should watch it.
Gotta watch season 1.
The 4th episode just aired. The 5th episode will be airing this week. You can listen to this and then watch the episode if you're listening to this on Thursday. No, but if you have a cable password, you can watch it through the USA site.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't. Thanks, friend in Texas. Canceling your cable.
Oh man, that's rough.
It's all right. I fully support canceling cable. So,
all right. Now we're talking about fall shows here. It's two shows that are beginning some news traction recently. First of all, they're going to do a reboot of MacGyver.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
And apparently, the reboot is going to be. Like how he learned all his like little tricks and how he started doing all these like weird ways of solving problems.
Oh, so it's gonna be like terrible MacGyver. First episode, he's gonna try to make a bomb and it's gonna like blow up in his face and he's like, oh, my poor face. That's why I look like that other guy.
I loved MacGyver as a kid. I'd watch it when I was like, I don't know. I don't even really remember the show, but I loved MacGyver.
I knew the verb MacGyver before I knew it was a television show.
Oh!
That's as bad as James missing the Super Bowl. That's not American.
You gotta remember, I grew up with cable with 22 channels, 6 of which were shopping, 1 was Hispanic, and 3 were religious.
Wow.
So. Also, a drama starring Dr. Phil, or not starring, but about...
What?
A drama based on Dr. Phil's life.
Just stop what you're doing. It's not working. You just gotta stop.
That got a pilot order at CBS.
Say it again.
So are you guys buying or selling these shows?
Wait, it's based on his life? Is this on the O Network?
CBS.
Like I said, the Zero Network. Oh, zing, CBS. Burned you, Les Moonves.
Yeah, who just got promoted to even more power.
That man. President Moonves.
I voted for him before Trump.
Yes.
He's done more.
Dr. Phil is another one of those people that I don't think has real fans. Or if they do, I've never met them. But I also then feel like a New York liberal who's like, I don't know how Reagan won. I don't know anyone who voted for him. Like, do actual human beings like Dr. Phil, or is he completely manufactured by the media and Oprah?
Well, there's
and
daytime
by
television.
The media and Oprah, that's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Do people only watch it ironically is the further question I would ask. Kind of like, you know, I don't even know, what is Kim Kardashian? Do you watch her? Is there a show of her, or is it
Keeping
she only
the
on
Kardashians.
The news? Okay, do people watch that show? Do people watch that show non-ironically? Like, oh wow, like I really want to see, you know, her win or whatever she does.
I just fell down on my floor. Do people watch her win?
I think these are the daytime television people. That's who's watching these shows. That's who's watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians. That's who's watching Dr. Phil. That's who's watching Oprah. That's who's watching Ellen. It's the people who are home all day, not working.
Mexicans.
Tweeting.
Yes, Mexican.
Yes, Mexicans.
So as they're watching
Mexicans
it, they're
aren't
like...
working, keeping this country going.
According to Donald Trump, he's going to make America great again.
He's going to cancel Kim Kardashian and Dr. Phil. No, but seriously, are they watching Dr. Phil and like, oh, I really hope that couple figures out their problems. Like, what's the attitude you're watching the show with?
You're watching it like you watch Jerry Springer. You want to see a fucking chair thrown. You're watching Dr. Phil because you want him to say, I need you to stop it right now.
Well, are these people strictly just trying to look for an excuse for how shitty their life is? Is that what it is? Is that also the purpose of the Kardashian show?
I think James pictures Kim Kardashian on like Survivor or something where she's like a fucking contestant. Seeing if she gets to make another week of fame in America. It's a show where a camera follows her booty around and watches her do mundane things. And then they turn it into high drama.
That's
yeah,
the show,
I guess
James.
Okay. Yeah, I still can't conceive of that. Like when I hear Keeping Up with the Kardashians, I think of like, you know, Starfleet from Star Trek trying to, you know, build better weapons so that they can fight for the Bajorans, you know?
Nobody's ever made the Kardashians joke before. That was sarcasm, by the way. If you Google it, there's Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It's a t-shirt. Look it up. So another show you won't be able to think of that actually is going to series is a show called Incorporated by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. To give you an idea of what this show is about, this article in The Hollywood Reporter says, the drama centers around Ben Larson, a young executive who conceals his true identity to infiltrate a very dangerous corporate world to save the woman he loves. But he'll soon learn that he's not the only one whose secrets may have deadly consequences. And then the president of Sci-Fi, where the show will air, said, the most powerful science fiction holds up a mirror to our world.
Sounds like Born Will Hunting.
He continues the quote by saying, Incorporated is exactly that type of smart, provocative series, delivering a fresh, edge-of-your-seat thriller that challenges notions of the world we live in today. Wow, who's ever challenged corporations? This is some new shit right here. I've never thought I'd see the day when corporations' moral standing would be called into question.
How brave of these Hollywood elite to stand up to big corporate. Yeah, I love Hollywood when they just pat themselves in the back for being so fucking brave. It's ridiculous. Look how brave we are. We're so brave.
Well, now
yeah,
we can
act. What was that movie they had recently about the commie writer?
Oh, Trumbo.
Trumbo, yeah, yeah, that was brilliant. Like, yeah, a guy who condoned mass murder. Like, we should definitely have Walter White play him and just give him accolades and make him into a proponent of free speech when he advocates for an ideology that destroys it. Perfect. Very good.
We're so brave. Look how brave we are.
You know who is brave? Is YouTube. Did you see what they're doing on their YouTube Red? So I thought YouTube Red was just like YouTube realizing everyone was making money off of them and being like, fuck, we can't allow that anymore. But they're actually legitimately trying to become like the opposite of Netflix. Did you see that?
I saw it, and this is another one of those things that makes me feel so insanely old. I just, like, when anytime we talk about someone named PewDiePie, I just... My brain just screams things about lawns and in
it's
my
PewDiePie.
I thought
whatever.
It was PewDiePie.
Okay, I did. Yeah, who are these people? Like, when I tutor kids, like, they're telling me about these YouTube channels and these, like, 6-second videos they watch where people are, like, throwing cats in the air or, like, wearing jeans and talking about it, drinking while wearing jeans. Like, there's all
are
these
they guys. Watching the Kardashians? I don't... Kardashians? See, I fucked it up now. Thanks, bitches. Okay. I don't get it.
So, basically what we're talking about here is there are YouTube original channels with people like PewDiePie, and they also say Awesomeness TV. I don't know who else is on this list that's going to be part of YouTube, but YouTube actually took these people who have popular channels, and they're going to have shows that you can only initially get through the subscription service. The shows will eventually become free on YouTube, but at first, if you want to see them right away, you need to be part of this YouTube Red subscription service. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of usage, what kind of viewership this drives, because even it came out recently, I think we talked about it, that we don't know Netflix's true numbers. So it'll be interesting to see maybe if YouTube releases these numbers or how popular it is, because this could say a lot if another channel gets in there and challenges Netflix and Hulu Plus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. The one thing I didn't like about YouTube Red is that they took away background YouTube streaming in the app that you could have just sort of like if you were listening to something on YouTube, you could close your phone and put it in your pocket. Now you can't have that anymore with the app. You have to...
I told you how to do that.
I know, but I don't want to use YouTube in the browser. I want to use the app.
Well, that's such a first world problem, dude.
I know. Fuck you.
So Justin, I have a question for you about this YouTube Red.
Okay.
One thing that really drew my attention about this story was the fact that, you know, YouTube is a subsidiary of Google. And of course, they have stacks on stacks of information with which to analyze and figure out what type of shows have an audience for them. Do you see, and Netflix has already used that kind of marketing strategy. Do you see those kind of marketing strategies as being a good thing or a bad thing for the visual media in the future?
It depends on how they go about it. So part of the problem with the Netflix approach to it is you end up with shit. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's like, oh, well, people really like to watch movies with Adam Sandler, so let's just throw a bunch of money at Adam Sandler so he can make more shitty movies. Like, so are you going to actually try and make good art in that genre? Or are you going to just, like, you know, make a hybrid Frankenstein of a show that it's like, oh, if it has cowboys and aliens and Richard Dreyfuss in it, everyone will watch it. And then you end up with, you know, the Cowboys and Aliens sequel starring Richard Dreyfuss. So it depends how you do it. I mean, if you look at YouTube, I think, like, using PewDiePie is a great idea. It's saying, this guy is a talent that people like watching. He drives viewership. Well, let's give him a show and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a mix.
Netflix has made some really good shows, though. I really like House of Cards, except for the last season. That made no sense.
Yeah, but you know how House of Cards came out? House of Cards came about because of exactly what we said. People really like British shows. And okay. They really like Kevin Spacey. So let's reboot a British show with Kevin Spacey in it.
Yeah, but they made an actual show out of that, other than the third season where his wife is passive-aggressively cooking eggs and I'm not quite sure what's happening.
Wasn't that season the most bizarre television you've ever watched?
Yeah.
It was so disintegrated from the rest of the show, I thought something, like, I kept going, did I miss an episode? Like, every episode, I said, did I miss an episode?
I was exactly your attitude, Daniel, only in reverse. I thought, like, something amazing was going to happen. So I was at the edge of my seat until the end of the season. And then, screw you, audience. You can have this spoiled for you. She leaves him at the end. And I'm just like, oh, I missed nothing. This show is just stupid. That was the climax of all of this. That's what her deal was. Like, it wasn't at all clear. And then Stamper's whole subplot. Jeez Louise.
By the way, it's like,
yeah,
the end
let's take a situation, a hard character decision for this man who I found pretty interesting, at the beginning. For the entire rest of the show, like, I found, or the first two seasons, I found Stamper very interesting. And, like, let's take a very hard decision this man has to make, and let's suck every ounce of drama out of it we possibly can by giving the audience no information. Perfect. Let's do that.
And the end of the season being literally, she's walking out, and he's saying a sentence, and it ends in the middle of his sentence. I was like, what the fuck just happened? I thought my TV went out.
They were trying to do Sopranos?
Yeah. Didn't work at all. Yeah. But that season is some of the most abysmal television ever created. They better fucking fix it.
But then Marco Polo, I thought that was badass.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah. Not the best plots, but just everything else about it was just amazing. Just love the character.
Horrible writing. Actors were shitty, but everything about it.
No, the actors were great. Like, it was just the writing wasn't, like, they could have done better with the stories themselves, but they're still just a great show.
All right, we're on a bit of a tangent now, but
yeah.
Point is, you can create good art as long as you are dedicated to the art part of it,
right,
and not just to the manatee family guy we're going to throw random shit together.
Right. It's like a creative writing assignment. Like, here, I'm going to give you a chicken, a mountain, and a firework. Make a story.
Right, you need to do something with a puppy, a monkey, and a baby.
It's like MacGyver applied to television.
We'll make a puppy monkey baby.
And, you know, to be fair, if you put Richard Dean Anderson in most shows, they would get better.
That's true.
So let's close out this section. Let's talk about this Oscars so white thing a little bit more. There's two things to say here. One, apparently there's talk about bringing back the quote-unquote black Oscars, to which I say, I don't care. Have as many award shows as you want. But then believe it or not, I think the Coen brothers became an ally of the Midside.
What? So
they came out and they said the Oscars are not that important. And then here's a quote from Joel Coen that I think you guys will appreciate. He said, quote, "You don't sit down and write a story and say, I'm going to write a story that involves four black people, three Jews, and a dog, right? That's not how stories get written.
unless they're on Netflix or YouTube. And they're just smashing things together."
They're continuing the quote. "If you don't understand that, you don't understand anything about how stories get written, and you don't realize that the question you're asking is idiotic."
Nice.
Yeah.
So I think that about sums it up, and I think that's a great way to leave the romanticism section for the day. So let's move on to people who don't realize the question they're asking is idiotic. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way. EA Glow, Steam Rocks, Godrest, Fallout, Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. I have the opposite of resting bitch face. And I'm going to read what this person wrote. "So whenever I go anywhere, pretty much, I have complete strangers walking up to me and chatting with me. I don't mind by any means, but the older I got, the more I thought it was weird. Even if I'm with a friend, random people still say hello or just walk up and talk to me. I've heard plenty of life stories. It's interesting." It's a comma splice. "It's been dubbed that I have resting nice face. Does anyone else have this happen to them? And if you have the so-called resting bitch face, men or women, do you enjoy that people stray from you, or do you wish people would approach you more often?"
I thought the opposite of resting bitch face was active nice ass. see what I did there?
You reversed all the... Oh! We're back to explaining all our jokes. Yeah.
Active nice ass is what I most enjoy at the gym. So I will
comedy
say that.
Gold. Okay, so seriously though. Resting nice face. So I don't have resting nice face, but I have a similar issue that this person has. I first sort of consciously became aware of it in Clemson, and I thought it was just a Southern thing. Turns out it's not. People will come up to me and talk to me. And I guess it's because I will just listen to them, that they continue to talk to me.
Yes.
I deal with this on a daily basis where people will just say things to me randomly and then I go, okay. And then they keep talking to me endlessly and I can't get away. You know what's really bad about this, by the way? Tangent? Foreigners. Foreigners love to talk to me. They fucking love it and they don't shut up. Thus I'm marrying one. But the point is, I think this is not a terrible thing to have in your life as long as you can create boundaries, which is what I really had to learn. I had to learn that it's okay, it is 100% permissible for me to say, "It's been great talking with you, I have to leave now."
Yes.
So, boundaries.
Yes.
That's the important part here.
I put in this question just for you, Daniel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I figured you'd tell that story. James, do you have anything you want to add to this?
Yeah, I think I have resting guilty face. Like, whenever wrongdoing is suspected, they're like, people search the crowd. You! Was it you? And I realized this when I was, like, in school. And actually, this is starting to make sense with the last Reddit thing we talked about, which maybe it's just all that Catholic guilt type thing. It just kind of infused into my face. Maybe it is literally true. Like, if you just feel an emotion enough, it's just burned into your countenance.
Well, that was my argument about the contempt thing and with the resting bitch face article.
Yeah, there might be something to that.
It would be interesting if we could classify everybody's resting face. Like, you have resting X face.
Right.
What is your X?
Justin has resting Boston face.
Do I? What does that mean?
He'll look at you and you're like, "You want to fight? What?
Yeah!
You have
oh
a problem
God.
With
he
me?
Does.
Do
he
I?
Does.
Let's
yeah,
go!
You have less resting let's go face, as in let's fight.
I will take you outside where it is wicked dark, and I will beat the living fuck out of you.
Oh,
meanwhile,
of
he's just
that...
eating Cold Stone.
I feel just is this kidding. True?
Yeah,
not
you,
really,
no, you,
but you're a little aggressive.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of your mannerisms. But speaking of bad Boston accents,
hey!
Justin, have you seen Justin? Have you seen Finest Hours with Chris Pine?
No.
It's about Chris Pine. He's in the Coast Guard, and everyone has the most atrocious Boston accent imaginable. You got to see it.
Is this on Hulu Plus ad free?
No, it's in it's in movie theaters. It is a Disney feature film.
I'll wait for it to be on Hulu Plus ad free so I can watch it like I watched Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
Perfect.
God. Don't watch Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Next Reddit. What single quote can define a TV show?
Boat. Boat!
That's the one you picked from Lost?
Yeah.
No, we
no
have
the
to go
one
back.
From Lost is clearly,
I'm confused.
Exactly. The one from Lost, I think to me is, when are we? But.
That defines season 5. The reason I included this question in here is to plug an article I wrote. If you've read my, of Men and Loneliness or whatever it is, of Madness and Loneliness, of Madness, no, it's of Madness and Man, Loneliness and the Human Condition. That's the name
good
of the
show,
article
good
I wrote.
Show prep.
Yeah.
The remember. Article you wrote.
Well, to be fair, the website's down right now, so the article is missing. So, fucking GoDaddy. But it's called Of Madness and Men, Loneliness and the Human Condition. And one of the things I talk about in it, and this is something that's not taught in, like, literary analysis or just, you know, fucking reading comprehension, is any good piece of romantic art, romantic fiction especially, will have a moment or a quote in it that does literally define the rest of it. And that's the key for figuring out what the rest of the show is about. Mad Men has that moment in the final episode, and I write about that in the article. But there are similar things in any good romantic piece of literature. And if you ever wonder how I do that, you know, people are like, how do you do that? How do you figure out what it's about? Well, I look for the cues, and I look for the trends, and then I see where they all culminate, and I go, oh, that's the key, and then I backwards engineer it from there. I mean, I believe we had that discussion with Whiplash, didn't we, Daniel?
Yes, we did. Talking about the defining theme and...
Well, the defining moment, though, the defining quote, where I was like, where I said it was when the teacher told him to never stop, like the person who really wants it never stops. And you said it was about the teacher saying, I need my Charlie Parker or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So we disagreed, but at least we agreed on this principle. So the point is, you know, we can sit here and we can make jokes all day about, like, what single quote defined such and such show. But any good piece of art, because, you know, romantic art is the best form of art, will have a quote like that. Or a moment. It doesn't necessarily have to be a quote. You know, that's why, was it last week we were talking about Let It Go? And I was, you know, talking about that with Elliot. I think Let It Go is the defining moment of Frozen.
The defining moment of Frozen is when I turned it off.
Aww.
I think the best one that I could think of off the top of my head for this was the defining quote of Arrested Development.
Oh.
Which is, I've made a huge mistake.
But also, I think you have to look at the real series finale, which was season 3, where he finally realizes that his family's bringing him down, which of course is his huge mistake. But I would say that is the key moment, and if you look at the rest of it, it's him making that mistake over and over again of not realizing his family's bringing him down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then in season 4, when he goes back to them, clearly he's made a huge mistake.
Right, and then he ends up getting punched in the face again at the end.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. James, can you think of any defining quotes that are this romantic key that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, this probably isn't an example anyone here's heard of, but it's definitely a romantic show, definitely a romantic moment in the artistic sense, is the show Outlaw Star. It's an anime, Justin, you and I should talk about anime. I got to get you into anime because it's a huge source of romantic art.
I've been making a lot of progress to make myself desirable to women.
Oh, dude, there's plenty of hot girls who like anime. You don't even need to worry
about
that.
Justin.
So,
you have
come on, don't sell out.
is this going to help me with Asians? Or am I only going to get awkward Asians?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Am I only going to get awkward Asians?
Is there a non-awkward Asian?
They're not awkward once you get to know them. Anyway, so yeah. Dude, once you get past the weird-ass Japanese-ness of a lot of these shows, there's a lot of romanticism to be had in anime. And especially one of my favorite shows is Outlaw Star. It's about this young man. He's like 18 years old or so, and he feels like he was always meant to do more. And there's this part where more with his life, and he's just stuck on this dead end planet. And at night, it shows him looking out at this rocket ship on a launch pad, ready to go. And the narrator says, a boy has the right to dream. And it's saying, like, you know, when you're a boy, you have the right to imagine all these possibilities. But when you become a man, you have to act on it. And he's there, and he's still dreaming. He hasn't achieved it yet. And I like that. That's actually the cover art for my Facebook, is that picture of him looking at the rocket ships.
It's a phallic symbol.
Exactly. You know, a boy has a right to dream about his cock growing larger, along with his ambitions.
Which makes sense with anime, because the Japanese are obsessed with big American penis. Which is probably why I should get involved with the anime community.
I'm telling you, you gotta look into it. Start with the show Death Note. It's the least Japanese-y of all of them that I've seen, and it's not quite as romantic as most animes. That actually is probably kind of why it's less Japanese-y, but it's still very, very good.
Damn it, I'm gonna start watching anime and listening to K-pop.
I fell in love with the American anime, Avatar, The Last Airbender, so.
I tried to watch that. I felt like I was watching a video game.
Yeah,
let's go to the next island and fight the next boss.
A lot of them are kind of structured that way. But there's romantic aspects to it, for sure. Like Hunter x Hunter.
Great.
Hunter x Hunter is kind of like that. But there's definitely like just intricate plots and weird violence that just pops out at you for some reason. You're like, wait a second, I thought this show was for children, and now that child just ripped that man's heart from his chest.
And that woman's being raped by tentacles.
Yeah. That doesn't happen in actual anime.
Oh, okay.
That's not a regular feature of anime. Yeah, tentacle rape. That is strictly, it has its own corner of the anime.
That is strictly those pages I found in Justin's browsing history.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Strictly in his browsing history.
I mean, usually when I Google Asian porn, that comes up incidentally. Last Reddit.
Oh, yeah.
The same people that need our, this is a shower thought, so they have a shower thoughts section of Reddit. The same people that need hours to text me back are constantly on their phones when we hang out. Have you guys observed this phenomenon ever in your life?
Yes-ish? Here's the thing.
I mean, this just means they don't like you.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't, one, text people. Just kidding. I do occasionally. Or two, expect a reply. It's not really a low self-esteem thing. It's just sort of like, I know that when people text me, I'm usually in the middle of something, and I'm just never going to get back to it. It's just not going to happen, basically. And if it does, it's a miracle. And so I just assume that that's how other people are.
Huh. Yeah, I love how sometimes the next day I'm talking to Daniel on the phone, and he's like, oh, I just see this text you sent me yesterday.
Because the only time I'm on the phone is when Justin calls me, so I'm on the fucking phone. And so then I look at the phone and I'm like, oh, Justin texted me and I'm talking to
him. That's also usually why right after I text you, I call you and say, did you get my text?
You are that hippo from the show Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Oh, does the hippo do that?
He's constantly asking, did you get that thing I sent you? It's a great meme. You should look it up. But yeah. It's Justin will email me and then send me an instant message about the email and then call me about the instant message about the email.
It's true. Yeah. I'm used to being ignored. That's why this rang true with me for that reason. Like, you know, they finally reply to you and they're like, let's hang out. And then when you're with them, you're on the phone the whole time. I mean, I'm usually on my phone, but how prompt am I with my replies, Daniel?
You're pretty fucking prompt.
Yeah, because I'm not going to
fucking... Because you're on your phone.
Right. I'm not going to fucking pretend. If you message me, and I'm going to reply to you because I'm not a dick.
Here's my problem with that theory, though. Because, well, it's not a problem. I think the theory is correct. Here's my personal problem with that, which is that even if I'm on my phone and I receive a text, I am one of those people who's like, huh, I should really think about my reply for this thing. If it's like a yes-no question, like, are you awake? Which Justin asked me about 67 times a night.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Most guys text people and they text girls to see, are you up? I text Daniel, are you awake? Are you up?
And if I am, I will say yes or no, or I'm in bed, or I'm masturbating, or whatever it is, I'll tell him. But if it's something that's like, I'm having an existential crisis, it's not like I'm going to reply back immediately with like, you are weird, go away. It's like, I want to think about it, and then sometimes that takes a while, and then sometimes I do other shit and forget.
But see, I can, with you, like, you're one of the few people I can, like, forgive for doing that. But, like, the thing I get annoyed at is, like, if somebody's texting you all day, and then they just randomly stop, and then they never reply to you till the next day when you text them again first. It's like, what the fuck happened and what changed? It's like, I was just entertaining you when no one else was around, right?
It means they started doing something else and then they forgot.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel guilty about this too, but a lot of times, like, I have a bazillion things going on. There are certain people, like, yeah, I will make sure to get back to them.
Well, that's what I mean, the certain
people. But not everyone.
How do you become the certain people? I've never become the certain people.
Well, I mean, Justin, you're just, I don't know, this just means those people just, they don't want to always talk to you. They're not on the same level of friendship, you know, you and Daniel are, maybe, you know?
Justin, you're too,
this
you're
isn't
too
a
texty.
Thing, yeah. Like, there's definitely people who don't, what's the word? Who take their friends
care?
For granted. Who don't care and they take their friends for granted. Yeah, but, most people, when they don't text back, it's just because, like, you know, they're interacting with the people who are face to face with them right now. And then because the face to face interaction weighs more heavily on their minds, they forget about your text. And then when you're right there, I guess they don't have their value structure in order if they're texting while you're in front of them.
Yeah, I guess we're forgetting that part of this question specifically, right. Which is if the people who when you're with them, they're on their phone all the time.
Right.
And those people are fucking annoying, and I do want to kick them straight in the gonads. But
I'm always bothered by when people say, like, oh, all this technology is making us so antisocial. No, this is great. Now I know when someone isn't listening to me. They're texting now. It's as if you could just imagine back in the day, people would just have to stare vacuously at you and you kind of have to, like, look and see, like, oh yeah, they're not listening. You'd have to, like, really figure it out. Now they might as well just hold up a flag like, yeah, I lost track. I'm not paying attention anymore.
A little white flag that's just like, I surrender. I'm not listening.
Yeah, my mind surrenders to the onslaught of ideas you're throwing at me.
Well, back in the day, I mean, we can have so many conversations about this, but can you imagine how long it took a guy to figure out that a girl was just using him for, like, food or, like, amusement back in the day?
Sometimes, like, 40 years.
Right. Yeah. Because you only saw her, like, if you called her or she called you. And, like, now you can be like, oh, she's not texting me back, bitch. I'm done with her. Like.
Yeah, it would make itself known in other ways.
Yes. Oh, man. I love texting.
Let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that I didn't know the defining moment of Lost. I'm just kidding. But seriously, I forgot about the island thing. It's been a while.
James?
I learned that that YouTube and Netflix really put a lot of thought into their marketing strategy with all these numbers and stuff.
Yeah. Justin, what did you learn?
That I may have to readjust my strategy if I'm interested in Asian women and start watching anime.
Yes.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I don't know how I feel about that.
You should feel great. And if you feel great, because you've just had a great podcast episode, why don't you walk those fingers on over to the iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. Open up the iTunes app, type in welcome to the not Night Vale, whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah, what's up with that shit?
Skip that one. Go right on down to the midside. Leave us a 5-star rating. We have a perfect 5-star rating right now from more than 10 of you. That's right. That's right. And we really appreciate it. We thank you. Also, tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell your teacher, tell the creepy guy next door who's looking at you with the binoculars through the window. He'll be interested, I guarantee. Those are the people we appeal to. And then if you're so inclined, you can like us on facebook.com/themidside, twitter.com/themidside. And of course, thank you to our Patreon subscribers. We couldn't do it without you. You can go to patreon.com/themidside and you can choose to donate money per piece of content that we send out. It can be as little as a penny. It can be as much as 400,000 pennies. Whatever you want to do, we'll take it all. Helps us do marketing. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Yay!